So as Tony said, my name is Rick Goldsworthy. I do run a company. We do a lot of stuff for NIH and CDC. I am a behavior guy. Across the board, what I do is I try to understand the crazy things that people do and change those things, whether it's the way doctors are doing practices or kids' conflict resolution and sexual health. Today, I'm talking a little bit about a project we've been doing with the CDC for 5 years about something called expedited partner therapy. How many of you have ever heard of that? So you may be here to actually see me if you've heard of it. Have you heard of patient-delivered partner therapy? I'm sure they did. If not, so what I'm here to talk about is a project we did to support that. Expedited partner therapy, you go in to a doctor, and you are diagnosed with a sexually transmitted disease, a bacteriological one. That sucks, but it's treatable, so the doctor gives you some medicine. What expedited partner therapy is the doctors in many states are able to give extra medicine for you to give to your partner to treat them without your partner coming in, so we can stop the boomerang, you stop bringing chlamydia and gonorrhea back into your life, and all is well. Problem is, there isn't a single source of information about how to do this. There isn't a single way to do this across the country, but the CDC has been promulgating guidelines to do this for roughly 7 to 10 years now. And we got involved to try to build some training materials, some support materials, some packaging across a wide, some packaging for getting this done. So anyway, EPT, there's a lot of evidence for it. It increases treatment of potentially infected partners. It reduces prevalence and incident and reinfection rates. It's supported by the CDC, and it's suggested for a lot of different populations. It's going to be a little hard for me to get through everything today because I really am talking about 5 years of a study that we're involved in, where we started off with really trying to understand the behaviors. We did qualitative interviews with a wide range of target audience members, finding out, you know, in terms of patients, providers, and so if you have, in terms of expedited partner therapy, you have the patient, the index patient, you have all the partners in where they would deliver this thing, and we have the providers themselves. And so we spent a year doing both qualitative and quantitative research to understand who would do this, why would they do it, and what are some of the barriers that get in the way. We then developed some pilot materials. Initially, all we were working on was a set of packaging. There was no standardized packaging as this was introduced. People would get it in a little brown paper sack in some areas. You know, that was the way you would be handed the medication in order to deliver it to your partner. There was no standardized way to do this. So we were standardizing the messaging and standardizing the way it would be handed over, we thought. We'll get to why that changed over time, but that was sort of the uber goal. In year three, we explored a little bit more qualitative, quantitative, mixed method stuff on something called PDPS and PDPC. Those are basically just screening and counseling versions. So one thing you can do is you can give your partner medicine. Doc gives you extra medicine, you give it to your partner. Well, if you're not good with that, or if your jurisdiction doesn't allow it, you may be able to give a screening kit to your partner. So say your partner didn't really, you know, I don't know if I want to take that medicine from you, but you can give them a screening kit. Pee on the stick, see if you're positive. There are other versions of that. And counseling, the PDPC. How do we enable a partner to be able to better interact and counsel somebody through modeling and other things? So we looked at that. And then in years four and five, we created some additional materials. We created some websites. We created a lot of cases. We went to a couple of different jurisdictions where this stuff was underway: Buffalo, New York, Seattle, Washington, Denver, and captured video cases of how does this look on the ground in these different states. And we've been providing technical assistance to a lot of jurisdictions. Okay, so you like the idea, you're trying to implement it, can we help you, can we get you the CDC resources to help you do it in your jurisdiction, or you like the videos but they don't quite work for you, or packaging doesn't work, we can adapt it for them. This is all freely covered under this grant that we received. So anyway, we follow a very an iterative, multi-stage kind of a design process. I work closely with target audience members. The way we look at things is, you know, try something out, hand it to people, get them to talk about it, see if it's going to work for them, fix it a little better, do some evaluation, and just repeat and rinse and repeat. All right, so as I said, I'm a behavior guy. So in year one, what we were really interested in is two things. Are patients willing to deliver this medicine to their partner, and are partners willing to take it from them? What are the sort of factors that get in the way when we do that, when we try to do this? So we did, as I said, a mixed methods approach. In the quantitative side of the fence, once we'd already identified some of the variables, we had 505 participants engaged in 10 different geographically distinct locations, a broad range of ages and demographic characteristics. We looked at their intentions, sort of a reasoned action approach. We used some hypothetical situations. We looked at their intentions, their attitudes, their outcomes, the normative beliefs. What are the things that would make you more or less likely to participate in this? And we created some models based on it. One thing that was interesting is there was a huge gap. This little thing is just the willingness to engage. On both sides, people either were really willing to do this or they really were not willing to do this. There wasn't a lot of middle of the road kind of thing going on. Well, maybe there wasn't a lot of well maybes. They either did or they didn't. As you can see from this particular chart. In particular, one of the things, and it's not on this slide, one of the things that really made a difference is if somebody believed it wasn't the place of a doctor to give medicine to somebody without seeing that patient. That was sort of the big sticky point. It's also the big sticky point for providers in a lot of jurisdictions. So one of the things CDC has been doing is helping jurisdictions get regulations in place where doctors and pharmacists are clear that they're allowed to do this, that they're allowed to do it in their particular area. Because if you're not, your license is at risk if you're the pharmacist. And that's a worry. Even when a state doesn't prohibit your ability to do this, it's a worry because they haven't specifically enabled it. So there's a couple different classes of how you do the behavior. Anyway, with the partners and with the patients, some of the key things that really made really impacted in the model were: if you believe that it makes curing the disease easier, you were more likely to say yeah. If you believe that it reduces the spread of disease, key message, is unlikely to lead to an allergic reaction. So I'm going to take it and I'll give it to my partner. My partner will take it if I'm not concerned at all about allergic reactions. So you really want to emphasize that message in your messaging. And then if it ensures people are cured. Well, if I give it to them, how do I know they're cured? They can go back and get tested. And one of the things that varies by where this is implemented is the extent to which the local public health clinics and the providers say, you should go back and get tested, or we really don't want to see you. And that does vary across the country. There are some places where, you know, it actually made my job very difficult, where they really want the messaging to be, you don't need to see us. We don't want anything to do with you. It's good for you. It's good for us. We're done. We're busy. Whereas others really want that stress. You know, come back for a test. Here, California, where it's implemented as well, is one of those jurisdictions where they would prefer that it feel like it's part of the process. You take it to your patient and to the partner, and the partner is brought in. So that's one of the things that varies across the state. And we'll get to some of the others in a bit. Environmental factors. Because this was new, you know, they want the medicine to be sealed. It wasn't always sealed, or at least seemed to be well sealed, like it was a professional kind of, this is a commercial deal. Inofficial packaging comes with a note from the healthcare provider. That was a big deal. Nobody had really thought, you know, have a note on there that actually has a healthcare provider's name or at least a public health thing on it that specifically says this is what it's about. So you're not just handing over a baggie and saying, take this, it's good for you. I've given you an STD, or you've given me one as well. Why don't you take this medicine? Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. And that it has the accompanying instructions. And following up on that, the only normative belief that came out of the models that was really key for both receiving this stuff and delivering it was the healthcare providers. As long as the healthcare provider really somehow communicates to both the patient, the index patient, and to the partners that, hey, this is good for you, everybody will, they will generally take it, except and unless the whole issue of I should not be taking medicine that is a prescription medicine, because that, you know, that's what it is, if it hasn't been given to me directly by a healthcare provider. So in year two, we developed the initial set of packaging, had some guidelines and things that were going on. It had to be useful to low literacy, of course. We tried to get English and Spanish into one package so providers didn't have to deal with having multiple things to pull from and deciding on culturally appropriate phrasing, inconspicuous, you got to stick it in your pocket kind of a deal. And we did some early evaluation of it and then did a field trial. What it actually ended up looking like as initial was just a packet, a punch-out packet. It was modeled on some other ones that are going around that, you know, 6 pages of information in each language, 12 printed sides, punch out for where the medication is. This one happens to be a printout when we were testing it. And it was well received by providers and by patients. When we went in, we started to do the testing on it. They would give it to their partners. They were comfortable with it. They felt it had enough information. Somebody, a partner, said, "Yeah, I get what this is about." They basically, if we look, you say, you know, I may have been exposed to chlamydia. It's a curable disease. That's all we really wanted to know, and that you can take this, and it's okay, and there's no major issues with doing so. Some of the other stuff they teased out of it, because we'd embedded it in there, is some safe sex messaging, because we always want to say that, and some get tested regularly kind of stuff. And we did say, and it's been our mantra across the board, you know, you do not have to get tested, but you might want to go get tested because you may have something else, or you may want to talk to a provider about your particular situation. And we emphasized that multiple times. They liked it, as I said, agreed that, you know, it would make it easier to do it and all that kind of good stuff. Year three, and I won't spend a lot of time on this, what we were interested in here is how screening might factor in and how offers might factor in. So one of the things that we were thinking about is, if I'm a doc and I'm going to offer this to my patient, and my patient may or may not accept, how should I make that offer, and then what else can I offer? And how should I stage that? So if I offer, for example, if I offer the PDPT, the extra medication, and they say no, should I offer them the screening at the same time? You know, so take it home. Well, one way that was being done in some studies was that I would be offered sort of simultaneously. I'd say, well, you could do this or you could do that. We looked at that and we said, well, okay, but that could affect the initial acceptance rate. You know, what happens if I say you could do this, you could take some medicine, or you could just take the screening thing, or you could just take a brochure, then that's probably going to lower the number of people who accept the medicine, which is sort of perceived as the bigger deal of the three things. We didn't know, though, so we tried it out. We did sequential offers with people. We said, if you offered the extra medication, would you accept it? And if not, would you accept the screening? We also did simultaneous offers, sort of an a la carte. Here's the deal. You can do these things with your patient. What would you like to do? We did a whole bunch of variables around that. So what we found was that sequential offers were what we showed, and was what we initially hypothesized, sequential offers were more likely to be effective. Higher overall rates of PDPT, which means, you know, more people took the medicine when first asked than when doing it all a la carte. There was a higher acceptance rate of some kind of EPS, of any of these things total. So if you looked at across the two groups, there was a significant difference in just acceptance of doing something with your partner when we did it sequentially. And it was more cost effective. There were no combined packages that way, where we had to give them both a screening kit and some medication. It was a little less efficient because, you know, your doctor has to do one thing and then they have to go back and do another thing. There was a little more time in the rooms spent when they did it this way. So we're looking at sort of time on task, that kind of stuff at the same time. Then we did some more development. One of the reasons we ended up with, we started off with packaging. I'm going to back up a little bit. We started off with packaging. We found that the real big problem is CDC would love you to do this. CDC isn't promoting a regulation, a single way to do this. That means every place is doing it a little different. That makes making a package, a medication package, impossible. Can't do one size fits all. Because in some states, you can treat for chlamydia and gonorrhea. In some states, like New York, you can only treat for chlamydia. In some states, you can do MSM. Here's one, San Francisco is one of them. Most states won't do that because the CDC's original guidelines said don't use this with MSM. There's some additional risk. We'd like to have them come in. In some states, it's treated with pills. In some states, it's not. In some states, you can get a script when you walk in, an extra script for your partner. And how does that work? In other states, it's just the medicine that's given you. And then maybe you can get three. You can have three, but only three when you go in. And other states don't really put a cap on it, and they just sort of try to figure out what's reasonable. There's all this variation on how it's being implemented, which makes it pretty much impossible to create a standardized system because there's no organization that says this is how it shall be done. So we became very reactive in sort of how do we support people, make them aware of these various ways that it's being done, and help them decide how they're going to do it. So our job went from sort of the standardized packaging deal, the research and just working with folks, it became like, okay, what can we make that'll make your life easier if you're trying to adapt this? So we ended up making sort of a patient and a partner web portal, a place where people can go find out more information about what the deal is, a provider portal that includes a bunch of cases of how providers are doing it, some animated segments that can be run in clinic offices on rolling loops and so on, and then templates. We made a bunch of templates. You know, what's the patient information guide look like? What's a partner information guide look like? And we spent time validating all of these with the target audiences in the various locations. So we have all these case studies. This one happens to be Denver, but as I said, I've got one from Seattle and I've got one from Buffalo, which just show the process, show how they're doing it. They ask all the people involved how exactly they're doing it and what they learned from the situation, how they do it differently, that type of thing, just to help people understand. And as I said, we got a provider site that includes includes all the templates, all the packaging information that they can use, and a patient site. So you could go here, if you're a patient and you receive something, you can go here and watch an animated segment. That happens to be a cartoon version of our funder. but every once in a while, if you're involved in projects with me, you'll find yourself in different ways showing up in the project, sometimes without permission. So you have that, and then we have these resources, this packaging. I note at the top it says partner care. We have versions that say expedited partner therapy. We have versions that say partner care. Partner care came out of the initial research where I asked the question that I asked all of you guys at the beginning: what is expedited partner therapy, and what's it mean to you? And people were like crickets; they had no idea. And so we ran a bunch of different names by people, and we were looking at do they understand anything from the name alone of expedited partner therapy, PDPT, or from a couple different things we made up, including partner care, and how does it effectively, emotionally, key them in? And the one that came out near the top was this partner care idea. It's doing something about me caring about my partner. It means that I kind of probably care about, I kind of get, which we thought was good compared to some of the others. And so that's where that particular branding came from. But there are these sheets. The issue I was talking about is after year three, this whole notion that it's different in all the different jurisdictions is what we really worked on addressing. There are no standard ways of doing this, so how can we tailor and adapt as different jurisdictions, Arkansas is one we've worked with, Wyoming we've worked with, to make the materials work for them? You know, how we kind of guide them and say, you know, the messaging might go one way or might go another way, but this is sort of our baseline that we've already tested and it's already in use. What would you like to do? And then I'm kind of a stickler about if they change it a lot, that we retest it. Fortunately, there's been grant funds for that for a while, but really, if you start mucking around with the messaging that came out of a research-based approach like ours, you know, qualitative interviews, quantitative interviews, we design the packaging, you do the stuff, you start changing the messaging a lot, you really need to revalidate it, or it could be totally not getting across what you want anymore. So you got to walk a tight line there when you're doing things. So we had to do that. This is an example. We did some stuff for New York City Health, cleaning it up and testing it for them. They wanted it because New York is chlamydia only. Created in year four and five, we created some new videos, visited Matt Golden, been one of the at the forefront of this stuff. In fact, Seattle is one of the few places where this works through they really have a system in place where this works through the pharmacies, and Rite Aid got on board in part of their jurisdiction. So a patient can be given a script, they can go to Rite Aid, it's already paid for. They don't have to get it. You know, they've worked all these the details of that aspect out, which is nice. Because that's really one of the biggest parts of EPT that's a problem is who pays. Who pays? Who pays for the medications? Most of the time it's grant driven. What they found in their jurisdiction is they could do it for very little money compared to the savings in public health outcomes. A lot of other video pieces, parts I'm just going to flip through. By the way, if you're interested in any of this stuff, the original site, the baseline site, we have one that's undercover right now that's a revamp as we launch the last stage, is at partnercare.org. I, unfortunately, have to bolt right after I talk because my flight got changed. So if you hit that, or if you email me at rick@academicedge.com, I am happy, rick@academicedge.com. I am happy to give you any information, any support. There is a little bit of funds left inside the grant project. If you happen to be implementing, we may be able to help you get that stuff for free. All of this stuff is gratis. So we have these. We have, you know, what's it look like? What is it? What's it look like at the clinic level, and what should I pay attention to at the staff level? At, you know, what would you do as a patient? What would you do as a partner? And then at a pharmacy level, the pharmacy level one is where we really captured what's going on in Seattle in terms of the way they've integrated with the pharmacy, with the pharmacy, the Rite Aid in particular there. So results. We created some models. We know a lot more about EPT now and its adoption. A lot of that early stuff has already been published in STI and journal and STD journal, so it's out there. The second stage, the year 2 stuff, are brochures, and that was also published. That one was in journal STI, so that's already out there. There's freely available materials, as I said, and finally, the implementation and assistance has been provided. What I think is that, you know, if you're going to do this kind of stuff, the unmandated national recommendations make this standardization thing very difficult. Don't even think about it. If, you know, funding agencies' first reaction should be, you're nuts, it won't work, you got to kind of drive it. But you can make baseline materials and then localize them, which is what we were up to. You know, what's the key messaging, and then do it. Okay. Significant changes should lead to revalidation. A research-based approach led to well-received materials. We did a research-based approach, but it takes a lot of time. You know, when you talk about materials development, you focus on the behavior. What are those behaviors we want the docs and the provider and the patients and the partners to do? I mean, you could see. There's a year of figuring out what's going on, a year of validating that kind of stuff, where you're really kind of focused in on it. And finally, we involve stakeholders throughout the whole deal, and that really made a big impact on it as well. So I appreciate all of your time today. The two funding sources are listed there. My partners, key partners on this, were Matt Hogben from, misspelled his name on there, and Dennis from IU School of Medicine. And we just cause a lot of trouble. So if you need anything, please contact me. But as I said, I have to bolt. Sorry. Thank you.